This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You need surgery.
Triple bypass on Joy 94.9.
You're here for another Tuesday night with the Triple Bypass team, and we're here to put the B in LGBTI. And you're with Anthony.
And James.
And we have a very special guest in the studio with us tonight. We're here to talk about a very serious topic with this very special guest. But joining us tonight is Matthew Parsons. He is the Research Operations Manager at the Australian Research Centre of Sex, Health and Society. Other people might know them as Arches. And he is also the director and producer of a show that's growing in interest here in Melbourne and in Sydney, My Other Closet, The Cabaret. Matthew, welcome to Triple Bypass.
Thank you very much. I like being introduced as a very special guest.
Well, you are, because we're going to talk about your show tonight, My Other Closet, The Cabaret. And we'd like our listeners to actually get involved, because domestic violence is a very serious topic. But you've been able to do something very interesting with this topic. You've turned it into a cabaret show. So we'd like you, our listeners, to get involved, as always, every Tuesday night. And you can do so by SMSing us on 0427 JOY949. That's 0427 569 949. Or send us an email on air at joy.org.au.
Or tweet us at Triple Bypass.
So there you go. Can you tell us a little bit about your role as a research person, but also how this show came about, My Other Closet?
Sure. Well, basically what we know about domestic violence in LGBT relationships is that the rates are similar to that of heterosexual domestic violence, if not slightly higher in some cases. And yet it's an issue that is really rarely discussed and very poorly understood. And we know that because of that, and because the dominant discourse around intimate partner violence is men's violence against women, that quite often people who are LGBTI and experiencing domestic and family violence don't actually even identify it themselves when it's happening to them. And so what we did, so My Other Closet, The Cabaret, is a project that my partner Russell and I have been working on for about 5 years. Rusty's sick tonight, or he would be coming to talk as well, but we will get to hear him sing in a little while. So 5 years ago, we decided that we would put together My Other Closet using Rusty's his own personal experience of surviving domestic violence in his first same-sex relationship after being married for 17 years. And we put that together with ACON up in Sydney to be a health promotion tool and an awareness-raising campaign, and to educate the community around what does domestic violence look like from the inside, and also, you know, what can you do as someone experiencing that or as a bystander to intervene in that situation and help someone get help.
Yeah. I think I should probably do a little shout-out as well to our listeners. Some of you may have experienced domestic violence yourselves. This might be a difficult topic for you. If anything we talk about tonight does cause you some issues, or to, you know, think about stuff that's happened to you in your past and you need somebody to speak to for a bit of help, you can call the switchboard or QLife on 1800 184 527. And that's a general support service that you can... just someone to talk to if anything that we talk about tonight affects you. And remember, if you need emergency help, if things are really bad and you need help right now, just call 000. They're trained to help with that sort of thing.
Great. Now, Matt, when we use the word domestic and family violence. It gets talked a lot about these days. People often refer to that and think about heterosexual relationships. What does it look like when we're talking about queer relationships or same-sex male relationships?
Sure. Well, I think what happens often, as we all know, when we say LGBTI, we kind of lump a lot of different identities together. And so it actually looks quite different in different in each of those letters of the acronym. And I think furthermore, when we talk about domestic and family violence, that often is this kind of lumping together of a whole bunch of different concepts. And so, you know, family violence can be violence perpetrated by a parent to a child, which we're, you know, quite familiar with concepts of a young person coming out and experiencing violence or emotional abuse at the hands of their family at that point. And very rarely do we label that as homophobically motivated family violence, but that is what it is. You know, other forms of family violence include elder abuse or sibling abuse. And so I think that same sort of messing together of all the concepts happens. But then when we talk about intimate partner violence, we generally in the community just assume that we mean men's violence against women. And yes, that's the more dominant numbers per numbers in the whole community. But as I said, the ratios of violence are actually slightly higher amongst lesbians, gays, bisexual, transgender relationships. So.
And then when you break it down into even sort of finer categories than that, you get terrible statistics such as bisexual women are twice as likely to suffer intimate partner violence as straight women. That's usually around 90% of those who reported that was from a male partner, but that means 10% maybe a male or female partner. So, yeah, sobering right. statistics.
And bisexuals in particular will have experiences in relationships. And I'm making an assumption here that all of us bisexuals have had intimate relationships with people of all genders, but I'm thinking about the different experiences of power and control and how that's negotiated in different relationships with different partners.
Absolutely. And well, we don't, behind those statistics, we don't know a lot yet. It's an area of research that's still emerging. There's not been a lot of research internationally and very little research Australian based. So it's difficult to pin down, but we do know, you know, that people who are bisexual have their own forms of discrimination and prejudice that they experience. And we do know that general experiences of prejudice and discrimination increase a person's vulnerability to domestic and family violence because basically their barometer is lowered as to what's acceptable behavior that they should expect from other people.
Do you think it's possible that the lack of a really readily identifiable bisexual community might be part of it? Like, there's less visible help to reach out to. Do you think that could be a factor?
Quite possibly. Again, I wouldn't be able to speak to research that shows that, but I think definitely. And that same, probably that same concept that we do know across the LGBTI is not labeling it as domestic violence or intimate partner violence or domestic violence, especially when things are used against you that are homophobic or biphobic, so which are quite often the case.
Right. And when the dominant presentation, I guess, of family domestic violence is heterosexual violence, you know, we get these images come up very strongly. We are probably less likely to identify power and control issues and safety issues in our relationships as domestic violence. And I think if we're a minority within the minority, then perhaps we're probably even less likely, and even sort of trans people might also be less likely to reach out for services that aren't actually specifically designed to respond to their specific needs.
And I suppose that's part of the problem. Sorry. I suppose part of the problem is that, yeah, when the image that you're shown is, this is what it looks like, and you go, well, I don't look like that. So
right.
The other thing that definitely it's difficult to identify when you're not meeting the dominant discourse. But the other thing that kind of all LGBTI experience is a higher pressure to have successful relationships. We've spent a really long time, you know, trying to put out there in the mainstream that our love is valid, that it's not a mental illness, you know, that right. it absolutely should be recognized. And right. so it's becomes more difficult to say, actually, sometimes it's toxic yeah. and it's not right. good for us.
And so that's what maintains a secrecy around it. If we're worried about our relationships being viewed as problematic anyway, then this makes
absolutely.
It even more difficult. So we're going to go. We're going to talk about My Other Closet when we come back after a few messages. If you want to get involved in tonight's conversation, if it's brought up any questions for you, or you want to ask Matt anything about My Other Closet, feel free to SMS. Again, that number 0427JOY949. Email is onair@joy.org.au. Now, Matt, this first track we're going to go to, this is actually from the play My Other Closet.
No, this one is a recording of Russell, not from the show, but it is gives you an idea of what you would hear in the fabulous My Other Closet, the cabaret.
So this is Triple Bypass, you're on Joy.
Hey, this is Sam Smith and you're listening to Joy 94.9.
Indeed you are. This is Triple Bypass on Joy 94.9 and you're here with Anthony.
And James.
And our special guest, Matt Parsons, who is here to talk about the play he directs and produces, My Other Closet, the cabaret.
I got downgraded from very special to special that time.
I noticed.
I'm insulted, Anthony.
I noticed. Dropped it very.
So thank you again for coming on, Matt. And if you want to get involved in the conversation, feel free to do so. 0427JOY949 is the SMS here. onair@joy.org.au is the email. You can also tweet us. How can they do that, James?
Oh, just at Triple Bypass. I'm tweeting now, which was why I missed that cue.
And we do have a message that's come through, and it's come from Coco. So thank you, Coco, for SMSing in. And Coco says, what an interesting yet smart way to present this issue to society. Do you have any plans to do other shows on this topic? When and how can we see the show? Well, we will be talking about that.
Thank you very much, Coco, for reminding me. They give you that lovely message, first of all, but also reminding me that I need to tell you all that the show is making its Melbourne debut. Our season is from July 15th to the 28th at the Bella Union. And if you head to our website, which is www.myothercloset.thecabaret.com, then you can buy tickets to that. The tickets are already up and available. You can also head to our Facebook page and like us and follow us, and you'll hear all about what we're doing in that space. So,
yeah, and don't forget, we'll have the podcast up of this show, and all the details will be listed there at joy.org.au/triple bypass. So we're talking about domestic violence. We're talking about specifically same-sex male domestic violence, aren't we? And Russ is presenting his experience in the form of a cabaret show.
Yeah, well, I'd say, so we used Russell's story, as I said, which was his first experience of a same-sex relationship, which unfortunately involved all forms of domestic violence, financial abuse, emotional abuse, psychological abuse, and pretty heavy physical abuse. We've used that as a platform to also talk about what violence looks like in each of the LGBT situations. So we specifically talk about some of the differences and similarities to all intimate partner violence, but what additional experiences or difficulties lesbians face, or bisexual people, or transgender people. And quite specifically, we wanted to really highlight what that experience is like when accessing mainstream services, because there's a lot of myths, pervasive myths around each of those forms of violence. For instance, that it just can't be that bad if it's two girls. They're just two girls. It can't be that bad. Right. And so it just gets dismissed. Bisexuality, of course, you're probably all very aware of what the myths are there, that it's not a real sexuality, that you should make up your mind or whatever. And I think there's a pervasive myth around transgender people that, somehow their identities aren't valid. And so, violence is somehow more deserved, in that case, because they're, tricking people or whatnot. Really disgusting myths that crop up in, when a person's at their most vulnerable, trying to access a domestic violence service and instead encounters homophobia and transphobia.
And it's really upsetting because, and also members of our community are, we know this, that they are at higher rates of things like substance abuse, mental ill health, and also suicidality. And when they're being, I guess, compounded with all these sort of other factors, that perpetrators can sometimes use that against them, and often that's why they're not believed, because they're made out to be crazy, they're at drug addicts, and they're making this up. And
And there's also the terrible fact that so many, especially younger LGBTI people, have been isolated from their families. So many aren't accepted by their families, and that's one very important support network that they're isolated from.
Absolutely, and that's shown in the research that it's more difficult for you to leave an abusive relationship if you don't have that family of origin to fall back on. And probably your friendship network is really tied in with this perpetrator. And so it's more difficult for you to find places to go to that you can rely on for support if you don't have that family of origin.
Right. Now, this play, I've seen the Cabaret show. It's a brilliant show. I encourage everyone to get along and watch it. One of the things that's very obvious about this play is something that I don't often get so close to when I'm having discussions about domestic violence with people in my community and in my workspaces. Because when we talk about domestic violence, we're often talking about what the perpetrator is doing, his tactics of abuse, his violence, these are the things that tend to sort
or hers
of,
or theirs
or hers or theirs. Yes, sorry, I apologize. So or theirs. And what this play does, it intimately connects you with Russ's experience, that the person who is surviving their way through it. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. Again, I'll apologize if anybody's just tuning in that so Russell couldn't be here tonight because he's sick, so I am speaking on his behalf, but he's my boyfriend and I'm kind of get to do that. But so I can speak, and I'm the producer-director, yes. Even more. Yeah, we really set out on the whole point of making the show was to move beyond health promotion strategies that involve pamphlets or brochures or, you know, providing information that's more passive, and using the cabaret format, using song and using personal story to really connect people emotionally. And you go on the journey with Russell and you get to hear an insider's perspective on not only what these things look like, but what they feel like. And we really wanted to destroy the myths around that, you know, that a person who accepts domestic violence, I'm quoting in the air, you know, is somehow weak or deserving, or, you know, especially when you look at violence where a male is a victim in same-sex violence, that they should somehow man up. And if they're not, then, you know, they're not performing their masculinity correctly, or they're somehow choosing this situation.
And of course, that then taps into all of the horribly problematic stuff around masculinity in mainstream society, especially the accusations that, you know, same-sex attracted men somehow lacking in masculinity and all of that complicated and horrible stuff.
Right. Because if same-sex attracted men are worried about being viewed as effeminate, then trying to conform to a sort of more dominant form of masculinity might be something they're aspiring to do.
There is some evidence that's starting to look at whether that might be factors as to why same-sex attracted men are more likely to be perpetrators, as well as, or not more likely, but that can lead to being perpetrator. And also why someone who is in a same-sex relationship and is a victim would be less likely to come forward, because they're admitting that they have somehow not performed their masculinity correctly.
Right. And in this play, Russ, I don't want to give too much away, but Russ grapples with, do I stay, do I go? And I'm just sort of wondering about his struggle around that and how private that struggle is.
Sure. Well, we also really wanted to try to educate within the play around some signs and symptoms and what you might see as an outsider if this is your brother or your sister or your colleague at work. So the play is actually developed so that it shows the cycle of violence. So it shows different scenes are specifically highlighting, you know, the wooing phase, the explosion of violence phase, the honeymoon phase. And so these are things that we know are classic perpetrator cycles and tactics. So often what will happen is that, you know, when violence occurs, then the perpetrator changes tactics and tries to woo you back in, and it's all apologies.
And give you hope.
Yeah, and convince you that that will never happen again. And then that shifts into a walking on eggshells phase where you're trying to, you know, avoid this thing happening again. And they're using that anxiety and control to control you more. And then you move back into the explosion phase. And so all of that we show in the play so that you get a sense of what it would look like and the struggles that someone's thinking through that. And in some ways, I think what's an interesting concept is that in many ways you can look at the victim as not the weak one, but the really strong one, the person who's trying to hold it all together. And we know that's really the case when you look at people who are experiencing violence and they have children involved, and right. you know, they are the experts at keeping themselves right. safe in the situation, and they really are strong and amazing people right. who are dealing with some pretty crazy situation.
I think that's a good point, because we don't often acknowledge the acts of resistance and resilience from people who are subjected to the abuse, because we often think of victims as people who sort of cower over in a corner and they're sort of fragile and they look like they're about to break any second. And we don't often acknowledge how incredibly strong and resilient they are.
And so often what I find, sort of out myself on the radio here, I'm a victim of family abuse from my childhood. And I've spoken to a lot of other people about it. And quite often what I found is that the people who are being subjected to the abuse manage to find, it's almost like a medieval castle. There's that one fortified point in the middle, and there are other walls and outer walls, and they might be breached, but there's that hard center that you try to keep whole. And as long as you can hold that, there's a lot of other stuff you can survive without.
Right.
That's a lovely analogy. Thank you for sharing. I think there's a lot to be explored there, and we try to really in the play we really try to portray all of that strength, and
you do that, and he does that through song as well, and which is sort of a very main feature of the show.
Absolutely,
you're listening to Drupal Podcast. We are talking about domestic violence tonight. We are talking about My Other Closet, the cabaret show. We're going to go to a track. We're going to come back after a few messages. James, what are we listening to?
This is an amazing track from the early 90s by Suzanne Vega, which is one of the popular songs that brought family violence into the mainstream conversation. And so this is Luca.
And you're on Drupal Bypass. This is Joy.
Hey, we're the Veronicas, and you're listening to Joy 94.9.
This is Joy 94.9 here on a Tuesday night with Drupal Bypass. You're here with Anthony.
And James.
And
my very special guest, going to be very special this time.
And our very special, gorgeous guest, Matthew Parsons, who is a research operations manager with Archers and also the director and producer of the brilliant show My Other Closet, the cabaret. And if you want to get involved in the conversation tonight, we've had a couple of messages come through, and feel free to send some more in, 0427JOY949. Email is onair@joy.org.au.
Or tweet us at Drupal Bypass. And we've just had a very nice SMS come in from our regular commenter, Jade, just saying, nice song choice. Love and hugs. Well, love and hugs back to you, Jade.
Thanks, Jade. That one was for you.
Well, actually, Jade, I have to say that that song is also features in My Other Closet, the cabaret. Russell covers that song. It's one of the kind of saddest points of the entire play, I must say, because it's a really beautiful song. Despite the kind of pop sound of that, if you listen to the lyrics, it's pretty intensely talking about what it feels like to be a victim of domestic violence.
Right. And if something has come up for you throughout the conversation tonight, again, feel free to call Switchboard, or known as Q-Life now, 1-800-184-527.
They're amazing people, and they're just upstairs from us, and they're awesome. They're great neighbours.
Great. Now, my Other Closet, the cabaret, we've been talking about your partner Russ's experience of a former relationship where he was where he survived domestic violence, and we're talking about the resilience and the strength and courage that survivors actually express, and which is not always sort of noticed or talked about. What else happens in this play? What else is it about this play that's so incredibly powerful?
I think the power of song is amazing, and so we really use the kind of cabaret musical format to be able to express the things that are unexpressible through words, you know. So there's a lot of singing, and I think we explore the highs and the lows. One of the mechanisms that we used in the play to try to make it not just incredibly depressing, but entertaining as well, and give it some lights and shades, is the truth was that Russell used song as an escape mechanism during the that whole relationship. And so we play on that a little bit more and build that up as a metaphor, where he's fantasizing that he is escaping and that his life is this fabulous cabaret, and you as the audience are part of that fantasy. Wow. And so there's this tension between kind of, we kind of name them three different characters. It's not named in the play, but as we're doing dramaturge and whatnot sessions, Liza Barelli, we kind of have created as this, if you see the promo, Rusty's a big, hairy gay man, which identifies as a bear. So Liza Barelli is this kind of cabaret character that's trying to convince themselves and everybody else that if I just keep singing and dancing, it'll all be okay, and it'll all be okay. And we wanted to try to explore that that phenomenon that happens where, you know, a person experiencing domestic and family violence has really, you know, can't see the woods from the trees anymore. There's a line that Rusty says that's, it's not like they hit you on the first date and then they're often racing. It's more subtle and pervasive than that. You know, it's a whole system of control and abuse. And, you know, there's lots of different aspects to that, and part of that is a person trying to convince themselves that they can make it better, that they could get better, that it could be okay. And I think we especially wanted to explore that because as an outsider, you might be being told it's none of your business, no, everything's fine, I just walked into the door again, as Luca says in Susan Vega says in Luca. And that might not be the story. That might not be what's really happening behind closed doors.
Did you find it was a challenge when, you know, workshopping and putting it together? Did you find it was a challenge to keep everything balanced? Because, I mean, you and Russell obviously had a very important topic that you wanted to talk about. But at the same time, I mean, you want to put on a good show that people will enjoy, even if it is challenging.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we use irony a fair bit. So one of the other songs that we use to talk about the kind of wooing phase is Stand By Your Man by Tammy Wynette. And it's sort of quite an interesting thing to hear that song in that space and go, you start to rethink of that when you listen to those lyrics. You're like, actually, this song is really gross.
Sorry, Tammy Wynette, I thought that was a Blues Brothers song.
Right. It really is. It's saying no matter what they do, you just have to stand by them, you know. Yeah. And it just starts to get you to think about how many messages there are out in the public discourse that really actually perpetuate how people should accept these kinds of situations. I didn't quite answer your question. Yes, it's very difficult to keep the balance. We have had a lovely dramaturge named Jess Murphy, who we've worked with, and they've been a really good help at helping us make sure there's those lights and shades and that there's humor where it's appropriate. You know, but one of the comments that we get quite often from feedback from audience members is that there's the places that they enjoy the most are where they don't know if they should be laughing or crying. And it's that intensity of experience that, you know, when an act finishes and there's no applause, there's just dead silence and sniffling, we know we've got them.
Yes. And that was definitely the case when I saw it. I mean, I laughed, I cried.
Did it change your life?
It was so incredibly moving. I've worked in the family violence sector for nearly a decade, and it was one of the most memorable, I guess, examples of a survivor's experience. It just grabs you by the heart in many ways. I'm just sort of curious about what you said earlier about sort of the light and shade, and Rust breaks into song as a way of sort of escaping the torment and the challenges of being in a domestic violence situation. Is denial? I mean, I'm using that word. I don't mean it to sound judgmental, but I'm wondering, as a sort of defense mechanism, escape from what's happening, or maybe even to deny that it's there. Is that a part of sort of managing yourself through it? Is that what Russ is doing? Or
look, I can't speak from any evidence base on this one, except for you know, using our own experiences and other people that we know to try to really get the inside perspective. And I think definitely that was there. There's you know, you don't want to accept that this is particularly what it is, even when you have a very sneaking suspicion that things are really not all right and you shouldn't be experiencing these things. You know, love is a complicated thing and you can't choose who you love. And I think when love is toxic and it's bad for you, it's really hard to see through that and actually make decisions, especially when abuse and control and power and violence are all in the mix.
Right. And then, of course, we have terrible just mainstream messages in society, like, you know, oh, it's better to be in a bad relationship than to be alone.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, one of my sort of pop music pet hates is Kiss with a Fist by Florence and the Machine, which is just... where the chorus is, a kiss with a fist is better than none. And it's just like, that's a bad message. I don't like
that's
that.
That's particularly
they're horrible messages. Message, and yeah. I've often heard, with clients I've worked with, I heard someone once say, you know, treat them mean, keep them keen.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's...
What a horrible message that is.
Well, and you only have to look at pop culture to see how often, or politics, how often we see, you know, we don't see anything about same-sex or transgender people's domestic violence situations, but we do see heterosexual violence. And we see perpetrators being forgiven a lot and continuing to have very successful movie careers. And right. It's sort of just quite a thing that we go, maybe this is just okay. And that's really not why. I mean, luckily here in Victoria, we're really trying to shift the game in that space. The Royal Commission.
A lot has happened in that space, even just this week, in terms of the budget.
Correct. Well, today it was announced that, now I can't quite make perfect heads or tails, so don't quote me, but I think there's 7.5 million devoted to LGBTI domestic and family violence, which is amazing.
Wow, I had not heard about that. That's amazing news.
Yeah. So that's, I think, something to celebrate. There's certainly some new exciting things happening that more details will emerge in the next couple of days. You know, I think we're pretty lucky down here in Victoria that we were able to really be at the table during the Royal Commission and, you know, shine a light on LGBTI domestic and family violence and have it be recognized and have us be part of that conversation.
Absolutely. And again, if this conversation has brought up anything for you that you'd like support around, please call QLife on 1800 184 527. This is Triple Bypass on Joy 94.9. We'll be back right after this.
Proud to be heard on Australia's only LGBTI radio station, Joy 94.9.
Thank you, Ricky. We're very proud of Triple Bypass here at Joy 94.9. And you're here tonight with Anthony.
And James.
And me, Matthew.
And me, and Matthew Parsons is the Research Operations Manager at Archers and the Director and Producer of My Other Closet, the Cabaret. We have been talking about My Other Closet, the Cabaret, a show about domestic violence. And how can people find out more about it? And where can they get tickets?
Yes. So head to our website, www.myothercloset.thecabaret.com. You can watch a little preview video. You can find out more about the cast and crew. You can follow some links to our amazing partners, who I should mention. So this show in Melbourne is debuting on the 15th of July at the Bella Union and runs until the 28th. That's through some amazing funding from the City of Melbourne, which we're really grateful for. And we've also partnered with GLHV, Drummond Street Switchboard, VAC, who are OSPIS, Drummond Street Queer Space and Switchboard. So thanks very much to all of those amazing service providers who are helping us get this message out to as many people as possible. I think one of the other things that I was going to mention about the play that we were really surprised about when we debuted it in Sydney was, although it was part of Mardi Gras, about half of our audience were cisgendered heterosexual women. And that was really surprising to us. We hadn't marketed to that at all. And what we got in feedback from people was that... knowing that it was a gay man telling his story and it was a true story and it was him telling his own story, that they trusted more that would be a genuine truth with integrity, that it would really explore the issue and have integrity. Yeah, I think that's another, to answer your question before we went to the break, what's in a unique aspect about the show. I think that is what really sets it apart. It's not an actor telling a make-believe story. It's really there, and you can't deny. And a lot of people don't understand, or they, when we talk about the show, they say, I've never thought about that LGBTI people could experience domestic violence. I never even thought that was a thing. And it's sort of when you've got a big, hairy 58-year-old man with a gray beard talking about how he was a victim, you know, it's hard to deny that.
Right. And I guess there's something in that as well around cisgendered women sort of telling their stories and sort of not being taken seriously or believed on the account of their own stories as well. It's we live in a culture that is not only victim blaming, but victim non-believing as well.
And victim silencing. Yes. We've had a lot of experience after the show of people coming up to us at parties or whatnot and, you know, telling us about their experiences. So, you know, we had to go and do some accidental counseling and be good at doing some referrals. But, you know, that was an honor to be able to hear people's stories. And sometimes that was in the middle of a situation, you know. And I think what I've heard from a lot of people is this idea that, you know, that you're not allowed to talk about it, even when it's 10 years ago. That you can't, right. You can't name your perpetrator. You can't name the situation that happened to you, and that you still somehow owe them this like silence, this protection.
Well, you wouldn't want to ruin their lives, would you?
Right.
Sarcasm.
Right, and in my work with perpetrators, I often hear them talk when it's particularly when they've come to a courtroom and they have an intervention order against them. They often talk about how challenging and difficult their life has now become because they have an intervention order. And sometimes these intervention orders are limited in the conditions that only prevent them from committing acts of family violence, and they talk about feeling disempowered. That's remarkable.
Mm. Yeah, I would say before we start, I can't think of a better word, so I apologize, but before we start perpetrator bashing or you blaming them or saying bad things, that what I think what's really interesting is how in the more modern discourse around family violence is looking at that, you know, it's controversial, but that most people... that both people are making bad decisions. They're making decisions that are unhealthy for them and the people around them, and that both people deserve, you know, services and interventions that help them change that behavior and help them be able to experience good relationships and from both ends.
And the sad thing, of course, is that so many perpetrators of violence were victims themselves, and that and acting it out again is pretty much the only outlet they have for it.
Well, I agree. I mean, we do have a community accountability sort of response that needs to sort of be strengthened, I guess. And I, as a same-sex attracted man and as a male who has male privilege, I guess we all need to think about how complicit are we in the perpetration of these messages that are harmful, that can actually perhaps promote family violence in some way. So
yeah, absolutely. And I think even just what we know happens a lot for all victims of DV, but certainly LGBTI victims, is how often bystanders know something's up, know something's a bit weird, you know, that see the bruises, see the marks, and don't actually do anything.
Right. We have been talking about My Other Closet, the cabaret, a show about domestic violence. This is Triple Bypass. We want to thank you, Matthew Parsons, for coming on our show. Good
thank
luck with the upcoming production.
Thank you very much.
We're thrilled that you are going to be having it on here in Melbourne. We're going to go out. We're going to go out with a few announcements, but and we're going to finish off with a song by Russell. It's a song that he sings in the play.
Correct. Yeah. We are a stage manager. Their name is Tanya Field, and they just happen to be an ARIA winning guitarist. So we pull them out at a certain point in the show, and they perform this number, which I think is a beautiful way to end the segment, because what we really want to do with the play is shine a light on the dark side of the rainbow and help to end domestic violence for people of all genders and all sexualities.
And stay tuned afterwards as well, because Kate Purvis is going to be on with Lady Chatelaine. And I think this beautiful song should be a nice lead-in to her gorgeous style of music.
It is. And so tune in to Lady Chatelaine, always playing cool tracks. And again, I'm just going to give you Queer Life's number once more, 1-800-184-527. This has been Triple Bypass on Joy FM. Thanks, everyone, and we'll see you all next week.
Somewhere over the rainbow, way up high. Somewhere over the rainbow, sky.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.